Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Today our guest is Kurt Fotenauer. He's the CEO of American Land Title Association. Since his appointment in 2008 as CEO, the Washington, D.C.-based National Trade Association for the Title and Real Estate Settlement Services Industry, Kurt has revitalized ALTA's membership and advocacy in the nation's capital. Membership for the 100-year association is now at a record high of more than 3,700. Kurt is a veteran lobbyist and political operative. Kurt handles the title industry's most senior contacts of the White House, U.S. Senate, and U.S. House of Representatives. Kurt, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here with you today, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's interesting. I'd say a year and a half ago, we figured out the appraisal industry was pretty important, and I think we just figured out the title business is even more important.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. The second something works really, really well, you're in danger of taking it for granted, particularly if it works well, you know, over a long period of time. But the second there's a threat to it, my gosh, someone says, you know, what happened to the lights? They used to turn on every time I hit this switch.
That's right. I think we just figured out that nothing real estate moves without a title policy.
Well, that is actually the case, what people don't realize in the United States, and it's frankly a proud tradition that we should take pride in, is that private property is exchanged by private contract in this country. The government doesn't issue a title here. You've got to transfer property to somebody else, and somebody's got to vouch for it, certify that transaction if you want it to go smoothly, and they got to register that on the public record. And while that's sort of an obscure thing that few people understand the ins and outs of, it turns out it's one of those very, very important things that if you don't have it in place, a whole market can come grinding to a halt. And I don't think we're going to see that with these REO sales, but certainly everyone's gotten a whiff of it, and it's made them pay attention.
What's interesting is, as evidence of the suddenness of these recent events, you just had basically an annual event in October, and I read that says the program for the annual convention is finalized in the summer. I doubt anything about this problem could have been on the docket.
You know, you're exactly right. We had no formal program set up because the subject planning goes on, as you suggested, several months in advance for a big annual convention. It nevertheless seeped its way into multiple conversations.
I'm sure it did.
I assure you. as a case study in how suddenly this thing came up, mugged everybody, you're right on target.
I would think if I looked up in the dictionary robo-signers, I wouldn't find it, but I have a feeling most of our industry understands what that means at this point.
Most of America understands what it means at this point.
And most of the lawyers do, too, unfortunately. Let's talk about that from a title problem perspective, and then also MERS, who, you know, those are two different issues, but sometimes they're lumped into one, but they're really different. So first, robo-signers and the process, let's say a flawed process, how is that affecting the title business, let's say, going backwards and forwards?
Well, it got our attention because immediately when the news reports first surfaced, because when a title company has placed an owner's policy and a lender's policy on a new home sale, we have an obligation, a contractual obligation, to defend that title in court against any challenge, whether or not the challenge had anything to do with our work or not. So we relied on the public record to search the chain of title, and there's really nothing better, or there's not a higher standard, if you will. The gold standard of a chain of title is a clear court decision. So we relied on court decisions that said the property belonged to this bank or that bank due to foreclosure. When that gets brought into question and the idea that the foreclosure may not have been legit, that the court ruling may not have been legit, we're automatically potentially in a whole big litigation process to defend those titles that for anyone who's bought an REO property, and that's how we get our interest in the outcome of this big issue that is gripping so many people's attention.
Okay, you mentioned chain of title. Let's talk a little bit about MERS. So my original understanding of MERS was that it tracked beneficial interest of who owned the notes. And I've read a lot about it at this point, and I just want to clarify that it's really more of a identification of who has servicing rights. Do you feel that the chain of title for who owns the loans has been accurately kept by MERS? And if not, ramifications of that?
Our experience is with MERS, and speaking on behalf of a broad swath of our membership, is that MERS has played an excellent role in bringing some efficiency, much-needed efficiency, to the marketplace. So what happens is you go onto the public, if you're a title searcher, you go into the public record and you find MERS' name on the mortgage, and you find a MIN number, a MERS identification number. And you go into the MERS system and you tap that MIN number in, and all of a sudden you know exactly who owns the beneficial interest, who has been assigned the interest, and you know where the servicing rights are. MERS keeps all of those records up to date and keeps them contemporaneous. Without MERS, every one of those changes in assignment would have had to have been done at the local courthouse. And that not only adds cost, but the reason that MERS was originally founded with the support of the title industry at the time, by the way, is that the courthouses would get desperately behind, particularly when the volume was up, and you couldn't get lien releases for months and months at a time. And so the paperwork was actually getting screwed up at the local level, much more so, and MERS was intended to bring order to a fairly chaotic situation at the time. It's delivered on that. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there and apprehension about MERS. No one really understood what it is and what it does, but it's actually been a real process improvement, and I'm pretty confident that unless there's something I really don't know, that over time that's the story that'll come out and be embraced.
Okay. You know, we hear rumors of, let's say, Stewart Title placing restrictions on policies for properties foreclosed on by J.P. Morgan, Old Republic, for a couple of lenders. So was that temporary concern, or is that do you think there are some insurers that are just going to sidestep the issue by not insuring some transfers?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to clear this up as much as I can. My understanding about the two companies that you mentioned was that they had issued instructions to their agents that simply conveyed the information that, for example, Fannie Mae had said, we've suspended all foreclosures on GMAC loans. I think J.P. Morgan voluntarily suspended all foreclosures while they could look at their systems again. The title industry has continued to provide insurance on REO properties. Now, Fidelity, which is the largest title insurer in the country, last week announced that they would not insure any property on which they did not have an indemnity agreement with the bank that owned the property. So that's the first real restriction, if you will, on that I've seen on this REO market. Now, the American Land Title Association has been working with lender groups and with Fannie and Freddie to craft just such an indemnity agreement. We think that's the best way to go in order to keep the REO markets running smoothly. And all it really says is the bank says to the title company, look, I warrant that we have followed proper procedure in foreclosing on this property, and should there be any issues surrounding the foreclosure, will hold you harmless for the legal costs that you incur defending, and that allows the companies to, with some confidence, trust the chain of title, if you will, and issue insurance.
This was this is just part of the article that Fidelity that I read about the Fidelity response that you had just talked about. It says, even if a court sets aside a foreclosure due to a defect in documentation, the foreclosing lender would be required to return to our insurers all funds obtained from that, resulting in no loss under the policy. There are other buyers that are in the market that can't get title policies, and those are people that buy at the courthouse steps.
And well, they actually can get a policy. If they go to a title insurer and seek to purchase a title policy or an owner's policy on maybe it's a piece of property they just paid cash for on the courthouse steps, they can buy that policy.
You're right. Absolutely, that's correct. But if there's an exclusion, the warranty that's involved, let's say Fidelity. I approach them for a title policy. There won't be a lender to provide that warranty. And I guess my question, are they going to be asking me to do that? Or are they going to waive that?
You know, I can't speak for Fidelity on that or any of my individual companies.
Okay.
What I can say is this. Every title insurance company has a different appetite for risk.
Okay.
That's why they call it a free market. It's worth asking and seeking out the insurance. My guess is if you're persistent, you're going to be able to find a title insurance company that can get comfortable with the risk. It may be a bank where they've already got an agreement in place. It may be that they know the processes that were used to foreclose upon and have gotten some confidence in this. My guess is you can probably get the policy if you pursue it.
How difficult is it to have 50 state foreclosure laws and know that the process is done right?
You're right. You put your finger on it. It's a lot to manage, and it also means if something's broken, there is no one size fits all solution. It's in some of these states, the issue of these foreclosures just isn't going to be much of an issue legally because the courts will quickly establish that. They're going to honor the foreclosures. In other states, you may find property in that state tied up in some litigation. A lot of the analysis that's going on among title insurers to determine the risk profile of providing insurance on given properties has a lot to do with individual state law and the precedents that the courts in that state have set with regard to private property ownership. So. It'll be a tale of 50 cities, though. You're exactly right.
In one of the articles that I read about the warranties, it talked about the lenders providing a global indemnity. And I thought that was an interesting term. It made it seem like it went beyond the lender to the securities world. Is that true?
I think that's probably an overstatement. Maybe it was a goal at one point in time. The way we're looking at things now, what we've seen to date develop in the market is an individual title insurer, Fidelity in this case, largest title insurer, getting an indemnity agreement with the largest originator, B of A.
Okay.
And I know the other title insurers are in conversation with other lenders. We may still see Fannie and Freddie put out some sort of market-setting guidance on this as well. I think that's all sort of swirling around.
So it seems like common sense is going to take over, and this will probably have a quicker solution than the, I don't know, the disaster that it you can play in your mind. You know, you can play this out and have everybody own a free and clear house pretty soon, too.
Yeah. You know, when the alternative is chaos, common sense starts to look a lot more wise.
I'm just going to go through a series because every weekend I get the email about another lender no longer existing. So what happens to title insurance? Let's say there's a warranty from a lender that who no longer exists on Friday.
Well, I think that's an issue that individual title companies are taking into consideration as they pursue indemnity agreements with lenders, because obviously the indemnity is only as good as the lender. And if there isn't a lender, there isn't any indemnification. So again, there isn't going to be a stroke with a pen one size fits all solution to this. But title insurers have an interest in seeing the market work smoothly, just as do lenders. My sense of talking to various market players is that there's progress being made on that front.
Okay. I guess the bottom line is, if the warranty disappeared for the title insurance company, it wouldn't necessarily disappear for the holder of the policy.
No.
Okay.
No. If you've got a title insurance owner's policy, and then you have got protection.
Okay.
It becomes the business of the title insurance company to get the indemnification from the bank, but that's something that the borrower never, or the policyholder of the title insurance never really sees or cares about. That's just really between two institutions.
Okay.
And about which institution is at fault in the situation we're in and should therefore be responsible for fixing the error.
What happens if a title insurance company goes upside down and you're holding one of those policies? I'm just curious.
Well, I'll tell you what. The title insurance industry is very strictly regulated as to its capital requirements. It is a monoline insurance, meaning you can't be in any other. We can't commingle the reserves for title insurance reserves with any other kind of reserves. It's made the industry extraordinarily solvent even through this down cycle. I'm not saying that people haven't been squeezed to death. They have, but statutory the statutory reserves can't be touched. So, for example, when Land America, which failed 2 years ago,
right,
did fail, it failed because it got the 1031 exchange funds caught in the auction rate securities market, and it went illiquid.
Oh, I see.
And they were not allowed by their regulator to tap statutory reserves for their title company. I think that you can say the title industry has been a regulatory success story because it's still around to provide the protection it promised. And when Landam failed, the title insurance units were sold to Fidelity National, which continued to operate them, and the reserves that stood behind those policies went with those companies.
If the reserves weren't there, and I know you feel confident they are, and they probably will be, but if it wasn't, I guess I'm just wondering, is there a backup insurer to the insurance industry?
The insurance industry itself frequently on larger claims and effectively cross insures itself. At a certain level, the large companies on really big projects will piece out the risk and distribute it sometimes to other insurance companies. And there are some cases where I suppose on some deals you can get outside reinsurance on that insurance.
Okay.
So the industry's been extraordinarily solvent through the worst of times. Again, I think that you could point to the statutory requirements for reserves that have so far proven to be adequate. You can point to pretty sound and conservative management.
Just on the 20th, New York courts were the first to institute new foreclosure filing requirements. Can you speak on that, and do you think that's going to become a national policy for all the 50 states?
You know, I don't know. I'm not familiar with their requirements in New York, but I think I can say generically that any time you're on unproven ground and you need a solution, any solution stands the possibility of setting an example for others. The one reason you might have some caution about drawing that conclusion too quickly is that state law varies so significantly sometimes from state to state that one court's decision in New York may not play in Oklahoma.
One thing I found interesting is that B of A, when they resume foreclosure activity, they didn't resume it in the trustee sale states. They resumed it in the judicial states, which I thought would have been a much more involved process. So I was just surprised that that's the ones that got cut loose first.
In the judicial states were also actually the ones where they stopped first, too, didn't they?
Probably, yeah. I would say that that's where it hit the fan in the courts. It certainly, a trustee sale, a state like California, normally the courts aren't involved. The trustee does what they do. And so, yeah, that I was just surprised. The effect of getting a title insurance binder, because most investors do that. If they're buying an REO to resell, they get a binder. When I get a policy after I buy a trustee sales, I get a binder. So what does that insure me of exiting the property?
Well, I mean, just that, you know, that you've got that you've got a company that's standing behind your ownership claim. Title insurance, title is a concept, right? It's a bundle of rights. And so there's always some gray areas in the law. There's always some nuance to the law and its application. There's changing court decisions we've seen all the time, set new precedents. And so when you've got title insurance wrapped around that bundle of rights, you've got effectively legal indemnification. And I think what that does is give future owners or lenders or whoever else is going to be involved in the transaction confidence that that the collateral or the property or however you want to refer to it is there, and that's the whole benefit of this system, because without those guarantees, commerce doesn't move around as quickly.
No, it's we know of several cases where a trustee sale buyer bought it at the courthouse steps, fixed the house. You probably saw the video clip of someone moving back in, and these guys are getting sued for quiet title actions. And so had they had policies that legal indemnification would kick in, and there would be attorneys from the insurance world protecting their interest. Is that accurate?
Exactly right. And more importantly, there probably would have been due diligence done to discover any flaws or potential claims against title prior to getting mugged by it. So the real benefit of this insurance is some peace of mind. You know what you got is yours, and that somebody's done a very thorough job in establishing that. And in the unlikely case it's then challenged, you still got someone there to handle the claim, and that's not coming out of your pocket. So again, title insurance is interesting in that it's not property and casualty model. We're not insuring against unforeseen or predictable future events. We're actually saying we've gone back, really done a scrub on everything. You look really good. In case you're not, there's still an insurance policy here to back you. And that's why title insurance claims are far lower than property and casualty claims. It's a backward-looking insurance. If the title industry does its job well and the public record's perfect, there is never a claim. The claims record in the title insurance industry is the record of where it's failed. And none of the guys that run those companies like that record very much. So it's not, I know that people are going to die on average at age 72, and therefore the odds that I've got to carry, it's not a property and casualty insurance model. It's really a guarantee that a job's been done well and done correctly and that we stand behind it.
Well, Kurt, I really appreciate you taking time to explain that to our audience of investors. Kurt Fotenauer has been with us, and I can't imagine a more important job right now than figuring out how title insurance can go forward and ensure transfers and refis. And good luck with anything that you have to handle, and I'd love to keep updated with you.
Bruce, I look forward to another opportunity to talk to you.
All right.
Thanks for being here today.
Thank
you,
Kurt.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.